Welcome to We Are Libertarians this week. We are back with a triumphant return after a few weeks off. Unfortunately, with these guys are back in school, I'm the executive director of a political party, so our schedules haven't really matched up very well lately. So we are glad to be back. We're excited to be back. These two have only fought from the second they sat down. And peace will come about soon, I'm sure.
Well, we're going to prove that two different thinkers can get along because they believe in the same thing. They believe in freedom and liberty.
I'm going to thinkers. So that was our new theme music, by the way. We decided to get an official theme for an intro and an outro, and that was Brian Keith Wallen, a local musician out of Richmond, Indiana, who is excellent. So go check out BrianKeithWallenMusic.com and follow him on Facebook. He's really good. There is no shortage of things to talk about because we've missed the Gary Johnson appearance. We missed the first presidential debate, the vice presidential debate, the second presidential debate, a governor's debate, and a senatorial debate. And there's about a million things to talk about with all of those. But the most important thing we could possibly talk about right now is Binders Full of Women.
Oh, yes.
Did you not hear the Binders Full of Women, Galt? Are you sort of out of the loop on that?
I don't want to sound like I don't know what I'm talking about on the podcast, but I did not watch the second presidential debate, so I don't get this reference yet.
This morning.
Yeah. No, I had class this morning. I've been in class since.
So it just struck people as funny. There was a question about the Lilly Ledbetter Act and equal pay for women, which is a stupid question in the first place because nowhere in the Constitution is it written that, you know, the president has any authority over how much women get paid. But it's one of those silly questions that presidential candidates get asked that they shouldn't answer, but they do because they feel they have to. And so he was talking, Mitt Romney was talking about when he was in business, you know, we love to hire women. We'd have binders full of women in front of us as we would. And it just sort of like the Twittersphere and then Facebook blew up. Like there was a binders full of women Facebook page and it had in 2 hours 170,000 likes on it. There's a bindersfullofwomen.tumblr.com that has all the memes, which is hilarious. Best was a picture of a binder and Beyonce, and it said, "If you like her, put three rings on it."
No, I saw one that showed a picture of Mitt Romney, and it says, "Has binders full of women, can't read it because the pages are sticking together."
The other one was Patrick Swayze, "Nobody puts baby in a binder."
Yeah.
There's just so many great ones. And that's the fun thing about, you know, there's things like Twitter and Facebook make watching debates more fun because there's instant reaction, there's jokes. It's like Mystery Science Theater 3000 while you're watching these political debates and there's a running commentary.
Oh, yeah.
It can be bad because if you go back and watch, like, the local debates, the Senate and governor's debate on your own without the noise in front of you, you get a totally different impression of the candidates. You know, I don't need a different impression of the presidential candidates, you know. We know what they're about.
I'm in political communication this semester, and one of our actual requirements is to tweet during the debates. So this election, I've really seen, I guess, what Twitter has to offer for the debates.
Right.
And I like seeing what people think.
I've been in the Star newsroom for the two presidential debates, tweeting for them, and it's sort of interesting to be in a group of your peers, a bunch of people who work for Republicans and Democrats and the Star and the media, and to see how they view things. I mean, it's sort of telling a lot of times. It's interesting.
I feel a little bad for Mitt Romney though, because I feel like he's the one that's getting all the jokes made on him.
Yeah.
I mean, we haven't seen any Obama memes. I mean, Obama crashed on the first debate. We didn't see any memes about that, but we did see Big Bird memes.
Because
Mitt Romney's so make-funnable. I mean,
I know.
He really is.
And let's talk about that. Why do you think that is? I think it's because Democrats and libertarians are better at Facebook and social networking and mocking.
Yeah, that's true. I think it is. I don't know. And I mean, don't get me wrong, Mitt Romney, I do not agree with nearly anything that he stands for, but, you know, personally, he's not a bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just kind of sad that he gets all this stuff to make fun of him, and he's really not, like, personally a bad guy.
Right. It's just, look at the demographics of Reddit. It's
that's 80%
it's what
liberal,
it is. Reddit starts
15%
all of
libertarian, 5% Republican.
I think that is the key.
90% atheist, and the rest is just your little things. If you, he's a Mormon.
If you look at the Libertarian Party of Indiana Facebook stats, 50% of it is male and under the age of 25. I mean, it's mostly that. I think that's right. I think it's the demographics of the internet skew, and we know this is coming because this is just the way our generation is shaping up. It's a libertarian generation, and you know, you look at the I Side With quiz, the race would be between Gary Johnson and Barack Obama, and Mitt Romney would be a third party candidate getting arrested outside of the debate, like Jill Stein. So I think that's, yeah, you hit the nail on the head. It's just the demographics of the internet.
Yeah.
So what are your guys's, let's start with the presidential stuff. We'll start with the debates, and then we'll talk about Gary Johnson, and then we'll talk about more of the local stuff. What have been your impressions of the three debates overall and the presidential race in and of itself? Let's start with Creighton. Like, what have been sort of the thoughts that you've had about the presidential race and these debates over the last couple weeks?
The presidential race, I don't know, feels kind of normal. Feels like a normal presidential race. Everybody's focusing on a few states. We haven't seen many attack ads out here, but I mean, it feels like a normal presidential race. I still don't think Romney's going to be able to pull it off, but the debates, I think, kind of lit a fire underneath, at least the first one, lit a fire underneath, you know, Romney supporters. And I don't know, my impression of the debates is kind of just like, they're always pointless in my opinion, but the first one was kind of funny because Romney did work it. I mean, he just he kind of just destroyed, I mean, everybody there that could have possibly been opposed to him.
He has had vim and vigor in both of the debates.
He's good. And to, you know, let's not forget, even in 2008, Obama was a bad debater. Mm-hmm. Hillary always wiped the floor with him.
Right.
So it to some extent, it shouldn't be like, you know, no one should be surprised.
I would say last night's performance by Obama was his best of any of the debates I've ever seen him in. Because,
well, you know,
he had passion.
You know why, right? Because David Axelrod, for the past 2 weeks, threw him in a room for like 12 hours and said, "You're going to learn how to debate right now, because we can't have that crap happen again." And that's exactly what happened.
And it was sort of, it's sort of funny. You watch like MSNBC and the liberal media outlets, and they spent 2 weeks or a week and a half bashing Obama and his performance and crying about how bad it was. And then last night, you turn on MSNBC, he did a cleanup mop. I mean, they were just ecstatic about his performance. All the Democrats in the Star newsroom last night were like, "Oh, that was excellent. Oh, great point." I'm like, "Would you keep it down over there?"
Although I will say, the vice presidential debate, I think a lot of people were surprised, because I feel like what Mitt Romney did on the first debate is what everyone expected Paul Ryan to do on the second debate.
Right.
And it was more or less the reverse. Obama got slaughtered, and Biden, I mean, I wouldn't say he slaughtered Ryan, but I'd say he probably at least won. He seemed to come off more like he knew what he was talking about more, and he got more "I gotchas," which is what people want.
Right. Yeah, I mean, the sad part about these debates is that it's not really about the substance of the debates. It's about the style of the debates. It's about the gotchas and the zingers and who had the clever line. And, you know, the media really cares about a hook. I mean, most of the media that goes into, like, the local debates, the statewide debates, they have their story already written. You know, and then they just plug in the quotes from the debates. I mean, that's my opinion. I mean, my educated opinion, but so.
Yeah, that's what I got out of it. I see it as, when I watch the presidential debates, when they answer the questions,
That was a great question, Jim. I'm just going to move on and not answer you
exactly.
At all.
Exactly. At one point, like, Jim asked him about Obama about Social Security. And Obama, or he was like, "What are your differences from Romney on Social Security policy?" And he was like, "Well, we're about the same. Let's talk about Medicare." And he spent his minute and a half talking about Medicare. But when they did answer, it was, I mean, potato, potato, whatever you call it, it's the same thing. Romney says, "Well, I like Romney Care," and Obama says, "I like Obamacare." But whatever you call it, it's the same thing. They didn't sound too much different to me. They're more alike than they were different.
Right.
So that's how I saw it.
I don't look at it like who won or lost. I look at debates and I think, well, independents get information. Libertarians are repulsed and grossed out by these presidential debates and disagree with everything. Democrats and Republicans are excited by them. It turns their base on and fires them up. And, you know, the media has something to talk about. It's sort of like the NFL season, you know. Tuesday through Friday is basically just talking about what happened the last weekend on the sports. I mean, these debates are like the nerd Super Bowl. I mean, it really sort of feels like that version of it, where it's like, who won? And nobody won. It's about information. It's not about entertainment. Politics is not some sort of nerdy sport or entertainment. Well, it costs too much money and too many lives for it to be considered
and
entertainment.
And that's why I kind of liked the primary, because Ron Paul brought in some substance to the debates.
Right.
And all that substance is gone. Like the first presidential debate, it was a domestic debate.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't talk about the NDAA. They didn't talk about the Patriot Act. They didn't talk about the war on drugs. They didn't talk about the Federal Reserve. They didn't talk about the IRS.
Yeah.
I mean, they didn't even talk about the Constitution or privacy rights.
Did you guys hear the word Constitution? You watched last night's debate. I didn't hear the word the Constitution at all.
I haven't heard the word Constitution come from them in the past, like, 5 years.
I mean, it really is stunning how...
Exactly.
I mean, if I were Mitt Romney, you know, who is supposedly the champion of, you know, libertarians are supposed to be closer to Republicans than Democrats, you would think that Mitt Romney would, with the Fair Pay for Women Act question, stand up and say, I'm running for president of the United States. I have nothing to do with wages. I'm, as president, have no constitutional authority
but they don't
change pay.
They don't say that because they're trained to be moderate. They're trained to be as moderate as they can be, and the most moderate presidential candidate will win is what they're told.
Right.
So Romney's just like, we'll make everyone happy. Answer the question to make the most people happy. That's what they do.
I think by accepting the premise of the question, they point out that they do believe they have a role to play in wages in the American economy. I mean, let's face it. They don't talk about these things because they don't care about them. They don't talk about the Constitution because they don't give a damn about the Constitution.
Right.
And if they did accept the premise of – they accept the premises of all these stupid questions because they believe that these have a role to play in their governing of the country.
Yeah.
And it's sad. And you point out Romney hasn't attacked Obama on like the NDAA or Patriot Act or anything. And it's obviously because he supports those things.
Right.
But that's the point I tried to make with like Ron Paul. If he would have won the primary, if he would have went up there, that's like, he would have destroyed Obama. He would have pulled so many Democrats away from Obama because of those issues.
On every single point, if Ron Paul or Gary Johnson were in these debates, the two of them would not be standing, either Mitt Romney or Obama. They'd be absolutely demolished.
Yeah.
I mean, because they have – and that's really why libertarians, the wasted vote crap is really thick lately. You know, that's really what I try to explain to people, is that libertarians don't listen to the rhetoric of these two sides, because the rhetoric is supposed to sound good. It's supposed to be attractive. It's supposed to fool you. Look at the results. If you're not happy with the government over the last 30 years, with the results that the two parties have gotten, why would you continually vote for those results? Because if you vote for a Republican or a Democrat, you're going to get the same results this time.
But people are afraid of change, Spangle.
Right.
People like the status quo, and that's why we have it.
Well, I feel a little more confident. I mean, do you guys feel more confident, or do you feel more energy to not, you know, against that wasted vote? Like, I'm not going to go out and waste my vote on a libertarian. I sort of feel like we've gotten past that with a pretty good majority of people. It's sort of past a tipping point.
Yeah.
You know, I run into very few people who give me the wasted vote argument that are independents. I get it all the time from people who are on Republican staff.
It's the most common argument I hear.
Really?
Still. At school, every day. Just like, well, show me in a poll where they can win and I'll think about it.
Right.
And so, I don't know. They just, that's...
Yeah.
Still, well, I mean, the most popular argument I hear is that it's a wasted vote.
You can see it just like, you know, broad spectrum across America. People aren't ready to accept it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know. It's stupid. Like when I hear people say, oh, well, they can't win, so I'm not going to vote for them. They're like, what? Are you kidding me? You're going to vote for the guy that you think is going to win? I mean, that you have no premise for your vote. There is no principle to your vote other than the fact you want the guy you
You want to pick the guy that's going to win. You don't want to have anything to do with it. You just want to put your vote for the guy that's going to win.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the principle that people come to the table with. It's like they want to be on the winning team. Yeah. So they just throw their vote behind who they think's going to win.
And
that's infuriating.
Yeah, and because of the Electoral College here in Indiana, most likely Mitt Romney will take all the electoral votes. So your vote really doesn't matter if you vote Republican. I mean, it's going that way anyways. I mean, it's... I don't know.
Yeah, and I thought Gary Johnson said it best at the end of his speech. Mm-hmm. Well, a wasted vote is voting for someone you don't believe in.
Right.
It's not voting... I mean,
and if everybody wastes their vote on me, then I'll be president.
Yeah. And democracy isn't two choices.
Right.
Democracy is as many choices as you want.
I feel like the main reason that people still haven't accepted third party in America is because people have taken the bait that, you know, you have to vote for the lesser of two evils, that you have to vote against the person who's worse.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, how many people support Romney because he's Romney, or how many people support him because he's not Obama?
Right.
I mean, I think because America has so, you know, taken that hook, line, and sinker that, you know, it's going to be a while before you can beat it through people's heads that you don't have to do that.
Yeah, I think we have to condition people to just press the L button for one candidate. Honestly, I think if people vote for one libertarian and they sort of go, okay, well, the world didn't end. That's weird. Maybe I'll do that again.
Yeah,
you know, maybe that helps. But
yep.
You know, I think it's funny because there's a progressive liberal page here in Indiana, Indiana Progressives or some page, and they had a meme of pictures of Rupert. And they say on the top, Rupert, you're a really nice guy. And then on the bottom it says, but I'm not going to waste my vote on you and get Mike Pence elected. And I'm just like, okay, see, this is why people should vote for libertarians, because not only are you stealing a Republican vote and a Democrat vote, you're voting for a libertarian. So you get three votes for the price of one. I mean, it's hilarious to see the wasted vote argument coming from the left now. You know, you see it with Gary Johnson because of his stance on civil liberties and the NDAA and the war.
And plus, in order for you to accept the wasted vote argument, you have to believe that the two candidates are different.
Which, right.
I mean, they're not, so
right.
You're not really wasting your vote. You're just voting for the other guy.
All right, let's get into that, because I hear that. That's, I say that, and then people go, what are you talking about? They're different. What do you mean they're different, Creighton?
That's what do you mean? No, I don't. Are you being?
I mean, what do you mean that they're the same candidate?
Oh.
Sorry, Freudian slip.
Well, they support the same things. Well, actually, I guess you could make an argument that they're not the same candidate, because Mitt Romney will support everything today and then everything else tomorrow. So you could argue that he might be the same candidate today, but he might be the same candidate tomorrow. He might be a different candidate tomorrow. So
listen.
It's just whatever day he ends up, you know, deciding to make a law or sign a law, we just hope he's the good candidate.
Now, listen, I am certainly pro-choice here in Massachusetts, and then as soon as I run for president, I promise to be pro-life.
I know, right?
God. But once elected, I will take neither stance.
Have you seen the picture where he's like, he's got this like look of despair or despair and whatever on his face, and he's got his arms out like this, and he's like, desperation. Just tell me what to say, man. I will. Just tell me what to say. I will say it.
I will literally say anything. Just tell me what you want me to say. We posted that at our Facebook page. If you want to go to our Facebook page and follow, you know, not just the, when we post the podcast, but also other funny memes and content and Creighton's blogs, go to wearelibertarians.com, and that will take you right to that wonderful site. Yeah, is it surprising to you guys that the Obama campaign has not brought out the flip-flopper argument yet? Because, I mean, that is what John Kerry was killed on. That's how George Bush should have lost that election. But he won because of the flip-flopper argument. And it, from a political point of view, it just doesn't make sense that they haven't come after him like that. I mean, does it surprise you guys?
Election's not over yet.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Oh, God, it's not over yet. I just want it to be over.
No, I don't know. I feel like, I don't know. I don't know why they haven't dropped that yet. Yeah. Maybe they are saving it until the end. They don't really have a reason to drop it yet because Obama's in the lead in all these states.
Is there one debate left?
One debate. Yep, I think it's Monday night.
Well, somebody's going to pull a big card.
It's the foreign policy. It's the foreign policy debate. So basically,
that's going to be two people.
Two people going. Listen, I agree.
How much more war do we want?
Yeah, pot calling the kettle black the whole time. That infuriates. I got on Reddit the other day, and I try not to get caught internet back and forths because they last forever and no one ever gets anything done. But I got sucked into one, and it was basically the argument was it was Reddit tends to lean left,
right?
They not libertarian, but left.
It's always it's very pro Obama with sprinkles of Gary Johnson fans on Reddit.
Yeah. So the post
chocolate
was about
ice cream with rainbow sprinkles.
I don't remember. I don't even remember what the post was about, but it ended up degenerating into a you know, foreign policy thing, and I just made a comment, yeah, Obama's good on foreign policy, that, yeah, sure. And some guy goes, oh, I think he's pragmatic, and I point out all these things that Obama has done, and he starts defending them. Mm-hmm. And then I say, what if George Bush would have done all these things that you're that you're defending? If George Bush was doing this, would you be defending it? Well, Obama didn't get us into a war by lying.
Right.
It's like, that's your separation. That's a separation of degree, not of substance. And it just kept going on and on and on. And I literally just couldn't wrap my head around the fact that this guy, you know, that if it was five years ago,
right,
and George Bush was doing what Obama is doing on foreign policy and on civil liberties,
Reddit would be so mad.
Oh.
They would not for one second even think about supporting
it. It's not just Reddit. Impeachment trials would be underway.
I mean,
they would impeach the crap out of him.
Yeah,
I mean, it's so maddening. And I can't wait for the foreign, because that's exactly what the vice presidential debate was when it came to foreign policy. It was like, listen, they basically just both stood up and said, listen, we're going to a war with Iran. We're just going to argue about how long it's going to take for us to get there. And the Republicans are saying, all right, well, I think we should bomb them sometime before the election. And the Democrats are saying, well, I think we should just lightly bomb them and put more sanctions into place until 10 years from now when we bomb the crap out of them. I mean, if you can't read the tea leaves, you look at the track record that America, the American government, has with Iraq, where from the Gulf War on to the 2003 war, they bombed them, they bombed their installations, they put sanctions on them, and eventually, well, we got to go to war with these guys because they're just not stopping doing what they're doing. And then what were they doing? Nothing. There were no weapons of mass destruction. I mean,
well, it's the Obama administration making war cool.
Right.
Like, you look at the anti-war movement during Bush and then look at it now,
right,
and there's a tenth of the people, tenth of the size, and we're in more wars than we were. We've had more drone strikes, more missile, Predator missile launches under Obama,
I mean,
than Bush.
It is pretty funny because back in, you could make the people tried to make the humanitarian argument on Bush's wars, like war in Iraq was a humanitarian argument to an extent. And the left just tore him up, saying that it's not the business of the United States to be in the humanity, you know, to go and
right,
to spread peace by guns and ammo. And yet these people, that's how they support the Libyan air thing, is they say, well, it was a humanitarian effort. He was going to kill all of his. It's like,
well,
are you kidding me?
Well,
if that was President Bush going up there and saying he was going to kill his people and that's why we had to go stop him, you guys would have tore him apart and said that that is not the business of the United States government. But Obama does it, and it's cool.
But, Creighton, even Gary Johnson says he supports humanitarian wars.
I don't mean,
but why? Why do you differ than Gary Johnson on that issue?
Because it's not constitutional.
But you can amend the Constitution.
But you haven't.
If we amended the Constitution to allow for humanitarian wars, you'd be fine with
but what's
it.
The definition?
I wouldn't necessarily be fine with
okay,
it, but I could be a
I
little bit
I was wondering
more
if you...
Okay.
What is the definition of a humanitarian war, though? I mean, that's the problem, is that we have... there's so much of an interpretation. I mean, Somalia... And
well, I mean,
secondly,
again,
how many different places in the world could
yeah,
you be in if you had these humanitarian...
If you bite that logic,
right,
you have to take it to its full
no,
extent. And you
I
have to
completely
be in every
agree,
single country in the world.
I just heard him say this, and I was curious by... And he said he wouldn't have went into Libya or Syria, so...
Which
I mean,
we actually think they said we're doing now. We're going into Syria now, I think.
I think
are
so.
We?
I think I saw a headline on my phone before we started. Pretty sure.
Assad.
Yeah, well, look that up real quick, because that's sort of breaking news. I hadn't even heard that.
Dun, 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 dun,
I mean,
dun, 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 dun.
It's not... yeah, hold on. It's not even like... It's not even like it's a surprise. You knew that it was coming at some point, so... it just really, it's such a bummer.
Well,
I mean, how many different places are we going to go to war in? So let me know when you get that, Creighton.
Well,
so, maybe we're not getting involved directly. I guess the headline is, well, now we're getting involved in Turkey, Syria, Russia, but maybe it just means that we're arguing with them. because it says now we're getting involved. The Obama.
Hold on, hold on, just 1 second. Okay, go ahead, Craig.
Says that we're getting involved. The Obama administration is accusing Russia of pursuing a morally bankrupt position. So it must just mean that we're arguing with them.
Whoa, this is breaking news. Be a little bit more exciting and tell our viewers what you just mumbled.
Here, hold on. Let's try that again, Craig. Ready?
Now the Obama administration is accusing Russia of pursuing a morally bankrupt position with Syria in the aftermath of all the craziness. That's what they mean by we're getting involved. So it's not really like
it's more diplomatic wrangling. But
if
you haven't paid attention over the last 10 years, all this diplomatic BS is just foreplay. I mean, that's basically the way that they treat it. I mean, it's just
Nike's dropping Lance Armstrong as a spokesman.
Okay, let's diverge into Lance Armstrong for a second.
What happened to him?
26 of his teammates, 26, no, I think it was 11 teammates and 26 people total, basically all said that he ran the doping ring. He didn't not only doped, he forced his teammates to dope.
What?
Yes, and this is why he quit fighting. Like, is there no one sacred? Next, we're going to find out that Felix Baumgartner didn't fall to Earth, so that it was all on a soundstage in Miami.
Yeah, we didn't go to the moon.
We didn't go to the moon. So we're about halfway here. So let's sort of chat about let's start with the gubernatorial debates, and we'll talk about the Senate debates and then the media.
Gubernatorial debate.
Let's go to the gubernatorial
debate.
Really
nice to hear three different opinions than just two.
Right.
There are more than two sides, and I think that was shown there, that there were three different opinions up there on stage.
The Indiana Debate Commission. Let's talk about the commissions for a second and define the two commissions. There is a great documentary on YouTube called Who is Afraid of an Open Debate? Go check it out. Okay. It's about 26 minutes long, and it basically walks you through the creation of the modern presidential debate commission. And surprise, it was created by the Republicans and the Democrats.
Right.
So, of course, they don't want third parties in there. And the Indiana Debate Commission is actually nonpartisan. It's created by 13 or 14 local media outlets. It gives open access to any media outlet that wants it. Thank you. You just kicked my microphone into my face. And then it opens access to any candidate that has automatic ballot access. And they've been in, I think, since 2004. And it was created because these media outlets would shut each other out. And so you'd have Channel 13 would get a debate, but then Channel 6 wouldn't. And then Wish TV would get another debate, and then Channel 6 would not get another one. And Fox 59 would get totally left out. And so they said, stop the madness, let's create a debate commission. And I think Indiana is incredibly lucky to have the Indiana Debate Commission. There's nothing like it around the rest of the country. And it is a great opportunity for people to see all three choices. So what were your impressions? Creighton, did you watch the gubernatorial debate? All right.
Aww.
He missed that one. If you missed the debates, the local debates, you can go to two places and you can hear or watch them. You can go to lpin.org, and I've got the YouTube video posted there of both the Senate and the gubernatorial debate. Or you can go to our sister podcast, the Libertarian Party of Indiana podcast, and you can download the audio of the debates. So
I recommend that everyone watches both of them.
Right.
They're really good debates. I thought there was more substance in both of those debates than there was the presidential debate, either of them.
Yeah,
and the vice president.
And in that podcast feed, you'll also hear the audio from all the speeches at the Gary Johnson event. I think I put those in the We Are Libertarians feed as well. So you're not going to miss any news on libertarians if you download our sister podcast. So and please go to iTunes, rate us, comment on us. That helps plug all of our podcasts and make us higher in searches. So please go give us a
rating. Let's start with our most likely next governor, Mike Pence.
How dare you?
Only because we're red. His one issue. What's his one issue, Chris Spangle? The roadmap for Indiana.
I got a roadmap.
Check out my roadmapforindiana.com. He's just a giant billboard up there that said roadmap for Indiana.
That is a great question. I've got a roadmap.
and that roadmap is as generic as he is.
So
as non-specific.
I wish I could have gotten a job on the Mike Pence campaign.
Why? So you could feed me information?
It's got to be so easy. I haven't been around that long, but I've never seen a candidate like, he's not even trying. He's like just sailing on the fact that he's Mike Pence.
Right.
I really feel like that's how he's running his campaign. My name's going to win the race for me.
Mm-hmm.
And so all I have to do is stand up there and say my website's name and people will go to it and they'll like me because I look pretty.
Now, Jack Kennedy probably.
Really pretty white hair. And, you know, I'm the only one up here that looks like I can be a president. And Indiana loves their governors.
Only way to beat name recognition is to use the Kennedy cadence. Joe Biden did that at one point during the VP debate, and he's like, "And I believe that Paul Ryan is a slut." Like, oh, he's the winner.
Oh well, Paul Ryan mentioned Jack Kennedy, and then every time a Republican does that, it doesn't matter who it is, what year it is, the Democrat goes, "Oh, are you Jack Kennedy now?" It's like, no, you can't talk about Jack Kennedy. That's our guy.
I knew Jack Kennedy, and you, sir, are no Jack Kennedy.
Yeah, you are no Jack Kennedy.
I want to be civil, but you know, when I look at the other candidates in the race, I look at Mike Pence. I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, he is out there. He is constantly on the road. He's talking to people. But he is not saying anything specific. Mm-hmm. He's not saying anything of substance. But he is talking a lot, you know. And I just don't that if I were an independent voter, that would not attract me to him at all,
right?
You know. And John Gregg, obviously a very personable person, very skilled in these debates. You know, he's a little more specific, but he spends most of his time talking about how much he doesn't like Mike Pence. And I just hate when candidates do that. That was my takeaway from the Senate debate, too, was all I really know about Richard Murdoch and Joe Donnelly is that they don't like each other, that they you shouldn't vote for either one of them. They didn't really get to why you should vote for them,
yeah, and
just not why you shouldn't vote for the other guy.
And I feel like Pence and Greg had the same thing going on. Greg kept attacking him on his attendance records, and
right.
You know, and Pence kept saying talking about his fiscal policies. So, I mean, if you look at the questions that were asked, I mean, I know I'm biased, but in both debates, the Libertarian was the only one answering every question.
Right.
I mean, I never saw Andy Horning or Rupert avoid a question and mm-hmm. completely ignore it. And I mean, several times Donnelly was like, "Well, hang on, and let me address what Pence just attacked me on 5 minutes ago."
Murdoch.
You know, Murdoch, my bad.
Yeah.
And I don't know. So I liked the substance that Rupert and Horning brought. I really liked how Horning made himself stand out. He kept reinforcing that idea that he's not the status quo.
It became a joke that he kept saying status quo and that he kept saying the same thing. Did you see the Senate debate?
I did not see that.
All right. I didn't think so. You were awfully quiet over there. As soon as we started talking about this topic, Creighton got on Facebook, started tweeting friends.
I think I liked that he kept saying the same thing.
Yeah.
It really did answer the questions when he related it back to the question, and it reinforced that idea. People, they take, like, I might have been you that posted it. Three mm-hmm. hours later, you can only remember what one of them stood for.
Exactly.
And it was Andy Horning, and he wasn't the status quo.
Right.
That's what he stood for.
That's exactly right. As I talk to friends and family, I am blessed to have a family that does not give a crap about politics or what I do for a living. I mean, they literally could not care less. When I was on the radio for 4 years, I think my mom listened one time. I don't think my dad ever caught the show. You know, like, they just don't care. And so I can call and I can talk to them and ask their opinion on this stuff, and you know, and a lot of friends that aren't political either, but they kind of pay attention. And all of them said, you know, I really liked what Andy had to say because I remember what he had to say. They could repeat back to me in one phrase. If you don't like the results that you're getting, stop voting for the status quo. You've got to make a different choice.
Yep.
And that's his message in this campaign cycle. It's a lot of what Rupert talks about. It's a lot of what Gary Johnson talks about. And it's the truth. Can you tell me what Richard Murdoch stood for in that debate?
No.
Can you tell me what Joe Donnelly stood for in that debate?
No.
Right.
I mean, Joe Donnelly said that he wasn't a Tea Partier, and Murdoch said he is, and that's, I mean.
And Murdoch, like, it blows my mind, because Murdoch is loved by the Tea Party. I went to the Brookville Tea Party down on the Ohio border, and one person had their car wrapped in bumper stickers. You know how Art Rupert's RV is wrapped?
Yeah.
It is exactly what that guy's his car looked like with individual bumper stickers. It must have taken 3 hours. And then, like, they say, oh, well, you know, you're close to the Tea Party, aren't you, Richard? He's like, the Tea Party? I've never met the man. You know, like, he scoots his chair away from them as soon as they're mentioned. And then as soon as he stops saying that, Andy starts talking and gives a just right dead center Tea Party answer about how this is unconstitutional and we need to follow the Constitution. I've annotated the Constitution. Go check it out. And he didn't do that on purpose. It's just who Andy is. He's not trying to score phony baloney points with the Tea Party because, trust me, that ship has sailed, I think.
Yeah.
You know, but it's just who Andy is, and it just blows my mind that those people don't get it.
Yeah, this is where we see the divide from the Tea Partiers and the Tea Party.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like Tea Partiers that are principled can see who the real candidate is for that. But the Tea Party, the Freedom Works, the right. money, the national... that's all going to Murdoch, and that's why he's the Tea Party candidate, but he's right. not. And Tea Party, I think many Tea Partiers understand that. I don't know. Horning said he's, I talked to him about it, and he said he goes to the Tea Parties all around the state, and most of them listen and want to hear what he has to say. They just, they don't like the wasted vote. And
they, almost every Tea Party has been mildly friendly, and has listened patiently. It was only at the North Central Indianapolis Tea Party where they turned their chairs around and put their back to them, and I thought that was incredibly rude and ungracious. You know, from an insider perspective here in Indiana, both candidates, both Andy and Rupert, on the day that they debated had fevers and were sick and were pretty nervous. Yeah. So I expect Rupert's debate performance tonight and next week to be a little stronger, and same with Andy. You know,
so I watched them both with my dad, who's an independent voter.
Right.
And he mentioned on Rupert. Rupert started off, you could tell he was nervous.
Right.
You know, he started off a little, man.
To say nervous is an understatement. I don't think people realize how hard it is to do these debates. It's not easy to do these.
But then my dad said the minute that guy cut off Rupert, and ended his time early, and Rupert stood up for himself. Ever since then, he sounded amazing.
Yeah,
he became more confident. You know, I don't know. I guess it probably lightened it up a bit for him because everybody laughed a little bit, and you know, it made him feel a little better. But that end of the bit, he did really well at the end. Really well at the end. And Horning, I thought was the opposite. I thought Horning did like really, really well at the beginning, and towards the end was when
kind of faded.
Maybe it was because it was the same thing he said in the beginning, but I don't know. The thing I want to talk about the most about these debates is the media.
Okay, let's get into
it. The media.
Let's go to Creighton first so Creighton doesn't fall asleep. What has been your impression of the media over the course of these debates? Any debate. I mean, because really, the media coverage of any level of debate is usually the same. So what is sort of your impression of the media and their coverage of these debates in the presidential race specifically?
Well, it sure is blatant to see a news organization's bias if it's during debate time. I mean, like, you knew who MSNBC supported after that first debate. You knew who Chris Matthews was pulling for after that first debate. You just look in his eyes and you could tell who Chris Matthews was pulling for. But the same thing, I mean, I don't know. It's such a circus. It really is. I mean, for most average people, I feel like there's this like level of duty that's almost come
number two.
Yeah. No. I mean, there's like this level. It feels like there's this environment or this, I don't know what you want to call it. I feel like it's like a duty. It's like it's your duty to watch these debates because this is what's important. And like, and for people who actually know what's going on, you realize these debates don't mean crap, period. What?
Right.
1 cent of nothing. They're just there for smiles and haircuts to go and who forgot to put the American flag pin on their lapel. And they go up there and they just basically spout crap for an hour, 2 hours, and then it's after it's all done, all we can talk about is who's had the biggest gaffe or who had the biggest zinger,
And the media just eats that up, and they play upon it, and they play upon it until the next debate comes around, and then what's the next one?
Right.
And the only time you ever get somebody who tries to delve into what they actually, the substance of what they said, it's like some magazine that no one reads. Mm-hmm. It's like it's an internet forum, or it's The Atlantic or something. It's like...
it's Harper's Weekly.
Yeah, it's like no one cares about these news magazines, and they're the ones that are actually trying to talk about what the candidates... said. Or, I mean, there's this fad with fact-checking now, which is just infuriating me. I mean, someone had a good article, I think it actually might have been in The Atlantic. They had an article about how everyone's got this, you know, they're embracing this fact-check. Oh, fact-check, fact-check. And the guy, the local news reporter got really big during the Ron Paul campaign.
I know who you're talking
about.
Ben Swan.
I love Ben Swan.
He interviewed Obama and... asked Obama about the kill list, and Obama straight up said, "I don't have a kill list," which is technically true. He doesn't. His campaign or his administration does. He's never said anything about the kill list himself. He always said it was his people near him that said stuff about the kill list.
That'd be really bad if his campaign had a kill list.
Yeah, well, yeah. But anyway, the assassination list never came directly out of Obama's mouth. It's all come from his, you know, his aides and stuff. And Ben Swan knew that. So technically, if you fact check it, Obama didn't lie. But, I mean, the point of reporting is speaking truth to power to an extent. And then he just straight up said, yeah, but your administration says this and blah, 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 blah. And that's what's getting under my skin is these media guys are jumping on this fact checking thing and they're not actually trying to understand the narrative around what these people, what these candidates are standing for. They're just saying, yeah. Gotcha. He didn't say that because he had a there was a the in that sentence. That's a misquote.
It's usually the easiest route taken when you do the fact checking. It's usually about one candidate says that another candidate said something and they got it wrong or they took it out of context. And then that's what the fact checking is. It's not about like hard numbers generally. It's about statements and who made what statement. So, again, it's still not that substantive.
But they've been eating that up. The media has been.
Right.
I feel like I've never seen it like this. It's like every single word that comes out has to be fact checked. And people are just – and I feel like they're just being arrogant about it. Be like, aha, I got you.
Right.
It's like the point of reporting is not to play I got you with the other people who disagree with you. The point of reporting is to understand the facts and put a legitimate narrative behind it that actually represents what is going on. You can't just say, oh, well, he didn't say that, so let's forget about it.
The other part is not to talk about this like it's some sort of nerd Super Bowl and who won. It's about to share what the candidates actually said. And you have these hour-long debates, or 90 minutes in the presidential race, and, you know, if there are any reporters that listen to this, I don't want you to take it personally because it's not about you. It's about – it's a systemic problem. When you read locally debate recaps, candidates generally get about 3 or 4 quotes each in these debates. And so the entire 60 minutes is boiled down into about 7 sentences of what the candidates actually said. And then the shell around it is about how they fought. You know, that is the narrative. And so I don't really think that newspapers especially, they just don't have the space and the time and the energy or the staff to devote. And really, that's because that's what we love.
Exactly.
That's what we choose.
And the campaigns know exactly what they have to do in these debates. I mean, the reason Mitt Romney won that first debate was not because he said more, you know, lofty things or more intellectually rigorous things. He just said more stuff, period. And he run the floor, so he won the debate. But when it comes down to it, I actually read people like, if you look at what Obama said to what Romney said in that debate, it was more or less Romney was saying, you're doing X, Obama, but I'm Mitt Romney, and I'll do X better than you because I'm Mitt Romney. It's like he's saying I'm gonna do the same stuff you're doing, but I'm Mitt Romney, so I'll do it better. And the newspapers understand that they can't go into the substance of the stuff. So the campaigns know they have to just give the newspapers 2 or 3 quotes, and then they have to put on a show. And that's what they do. That's what they're trained to do.
That's exactly right. And I mean that's because that's how the media works. And it all comes back to Andy Horning pounds this a lot. Because it's exactly true. The candidates prepare themselves and their staffs prepare them for what the media likes. The media then prepares what the people like. And so because we choose a certain type of media, we get a certain type of candidate and a certain type of debate. and we have to start making better choices at every level. Because I can tell you, last night, you know, I was talking with someone else who was on the panel for the Star debate tweeting live thingy. And again, I think if I walked up to Teddy Roosevelt and said, I'm live tweeting your debate, he'd punch me right in the face. I mean, it sounds so unmanly to say, I'm live tweeting the debate tonight, guys. We were talking, you know, we try hard to find articles and facts and, you know, and give Gary Johnson's point of view and give substance and talk about gun rights and gun laws and prohibition doesn't work. It's about job creation. We'll create less, you know. So you have these whole, like, little things that you're proud of. You fit, you know, substance into 140 characters and you tweet it out and nobody pays attention to it. But then you make a joke like, where can I find the women of binders? And it gets retweeted like 20 times. You know, you know what gets retweet, and it's not the stuff that is actually important. It's the jokes. It's the snarky stuff. It's the, you know, it's the, oh, well, I can't believe he's wearing a red tie. He's a Democrat. You know, it's that kind of stuff that gets retweets. It's because
it's kind of sad that the race for the office that was held by people like George Washington and Thomas Jefferson has degenerated into essentially reality television.
That's exactly
and
right.
And that's because that's what people want. They want reality television. Yep. That's why America is going to hell, because we put reality television at the top of our to-do list.
And everybody wants to put it on pundits, and everybody wants to put it on consultants, and put it on candidates, and put it on media and reporters. It's on the people. It's what we choose. We love to have our ears tickled.
Yeah, no, I mean, people like to say Lee Atwater started all this, but like, no. If anything, he was just quicker at getting the people what they wanted.
Right.
They want a gladiator fight. They want a circus. They want that crap. And until people really understand that these debates don't mean anything, because you guys have not made them, you made them be meaningless. I mean, I really don't see how much is going to get done, because if they can accept that, if they take that hook, line, and sinker, that these debates are, you know, full of substance, if they take that, then they're obviously going to take the bait that you have to vote for the other party just so that you can keep the bad guy out.
And
something.
I would argue that these debates are full of substance. If you sit down and you take the time to watch them, it's just that, you know, my friend made a great comment last night. He said, I can't wait for this debate to be over so they can tell me who won the debate and what I should think. You know, and it's – you really just need original sources, and that's what you have to go back to. Let's go to our little buddy Galt here.
What's up?
And let's find out what your opinion on all this is before I ask a different question about the media. So what's your opinion on the media and the coverage of these debates?
The coverage of the debates?
Yeah.
Yeah, what you guys are saying, it's not substantive. I don't know.
Are you saying? I thought what we said was very substantive.
I live tweet during the debates, so you can follow me at Galt09 on Twitter.
Galt09.
Yep.
Chris Spangle, ChrisSpangle. And what's yours, Creighton?
Creighton Harry.
You have to speak into the microphone.
Creighton Harry, Harry.
You should have done Harry.
But,
Or
I usually tweet as Galeupy.
Okay. So, and you can follow us on We Are, the letter R, Libertarians, right? Is that what it is?
Yeah.
I don't know.
We should start using that.
Have we ever used that?
I tweet on it all the time.
You do?
Oh yeah. Hey,
thanks, Spangle.
Yeah. So, last night at the Star debate, Carrie Ritchie, one of the reporters for the Star, goes, are you all these libertarian accounts that keeps retweeting me? I'm like, of course I am. I'm the only libertarian. What are you talking about? So, your opinion on the debates, Mr. Galt. We interrupted you.
Oh, on the debates, yes.
On the
coverage. So, I wanted to take the media route a little differently than you guys took it. That's why I let you finish that up.
Go for it.
All right. So, like you guys said, people. This is what people want. And people have they've allowed the media entities to construct this reality that we have two choices for president, that we have two candidates for every position, that we have a Republican and a Democrat. And it's almost unquestioned in the media. I mean, people, like, if we're in a group of people maybe at, like, Thanksgiving, we might talk about a third-party candidate or talk about, you know, a different choice. But in the media, that's what it is. That's how I see it. And with the presidential debate, you have Romney or Obama. That's all the media says. With the governor's debate, you had three people up there on stage, and the media afterwards says, well, Pence was attacking, was being attacked, and blah, blah, blah. Oh, and Rupert made great comic relief, and that's all they mention of him, if they mention him at all. And then you have the Senate debate. There's the video on C-SPAN, which is a publicly funded source, I guess, C-SPAN is. It has the Senate debate, Indiana Senate debate on there, and it says, Richard Murdoch debates Joe Donnelly. And you can watch the video and see a third person on stage, but the description on C-SPAN doesn't even have his name in there.
I'm going to fact check you. C-SPAN is funded by the cable companies, not by the... Okay. It's not like PBS or anything.
So. Okay.
But anyways, you're right.
And it doesn't even mention his name, and he's clearly in the video. He clearly answers the questions. He's clearly in the debate, and his name isn't even in the description.
And normally I wouldn't call a reporter out specifically, but Jim Shella continually refers to Rupert as comic relief in these debates. And he's just... I mean, libertarians make up 10% of the voting population at this point, okay? And the voting population is about 30% of the population that is old enough to vote, all right? So it's still a pretty good amount. And so why would you want to piss off 10% of potential viewers?
Because he's a reporter.
No,
right.
No. And why?
But
why?
It's about ratings. Why would you want to piss people off?
Well,
it's just...
I don't even understand why they discredit us, because 10% can make or break any election.
Exactly.
Every single election. Like, I don't know. Most presidential elections are decided within 10%.
Right.
I'm just not getting that. And that's when it goes to Gary Johnson. You have Gary Johnson selling out a room a week before the event in downtown Indianapolis. Probably the largest Libertarian Party of Indiana event ever. Probably, or it was tied, basically, for the largest Gary Johnson event ever. And not one local news station came.
No, only our friends at Nuvo, an independent media outlet, came and did an interview with Gary Johnson.
And the only interaction I even had with any media was the day after.
Right.
I think it was Wish emailed me and said, is Gary Johnson still in town? We'd like to have him on. And he was gone by then.
Wish TV did want him on the morning show the morning after.
Yeah.
And our friends at the Flyer and the Shelby County newspaper, the Shelbyville newspaper, came out and covered it as well. And I saw it in a couple other places, but... You know, I just don't understand at this point, the libertarian movement is growing, the base is growing, and I can tell you, libertarians bring web traffic, because I've had several people comment to me that we are starting to cover libertarians more, because anytime a local libertarian like Andy or Rupert is in a poll, our web traffic spikes like crazy, and we win the poll. And they notice that when a libertarian is on or is mentioned on a radio show, they get more calls. And so they cover it more, and it's incredibly important for people in the libertarian movement. Anytime you see or hear a candidate being mentioned well, or a candidate being mentioned poorly or not at all, comment on it. Because if you flex your voice, it gets more attention. Because when they get more web traffic, that means they can make more money by selling more ads and raising the prices on ads. So... You know, I found that kind of encouraging over the last couple of weeks to hear that you know, we're bringing web traffic. When we talk about Rupert or Andy or local candidates and congressional candidates of yours, you bring web traffic. You bring more callers.
Yeah.
And that's going to be a key.
Unfortunately, the media I've seen us get, and us, I mean libertarians, has been, in my opinion, pretty shoddy. Not to call out anyone, and even our friend Abdul, but... the way Indie Politics covered the Gary Johnson event.
Right.
I mean, it said, you know, Gary Johnson came and spoke to a group of local libertarians.
Well,
it was a packed room of 500 people.
Yeah, but he then posted an interview with him, which was more than anybody else did.
I mean, yeah. I'm
going to stick up for Abdul, because Abdul has been he is not a supporter of libertarians, but he gives us a voice like nobody else does, and the rest of the media listens to Abdul.
Well, he poorly covered that story, and that's my opinion of it. And he can be friendly all he wants, and he included us in there, and he came, but it was a poorly covered. If he was on a major news station, that wouldn't have been acceptable to me if I was a producer. So that's how I saw that. I'm glad that he covered the story, but he didn't.
Abdul's gonna kick your ass.
You don't. That's not what happened. It's not even. It doesn't give any perspective. That's what reporters are supposed to do for me, in my opinion. I can't make it to everything I want to go to, but I want to know what happened. I want to know how people felt. I want to know perspectives.
Right.
And I don't know. I didn't get that on any out of any media at all with Johnson.
And you know, I had an interesting point made to me last night at the Star thing. Gary Varvel tweeted that the last 4 years have been great for the Muslim Brotherhood. And so he's the Indianapolis Star cartoonist, very good cartoonist, but he's very Tea Party right.
Okay.
And you should have heard some of the comments from peers. And I just kind of said, you know, I don't understand what you guys are getting so bent out of shape about. Yeah, it was a near racist tweet, as Amos Brown called it, a local radio personality. Yeah, it was a neo-racist tweet, but he did it on his own time, and he didn't do it on any Star resources, and he's essentially an opinion writer. He's a columnist. He's on the editorial board. He's not, you know, a writer like Mary Beth Schneider.
Writers.
Right, like a journalist.
Writers.
Right, like a journalist, I mean. And one of them looked at me, one of the people who works for the Star, and said, the reason the people who work on the Star in this room are upset about it is because even if you're a columnist, you are supposed to start conversations and inform people with your opinion. You're not supposed to throw bombs. I was like, all right, I understand that. I said, let me give Gary the benefit of the doubt. Maybe he's saying that, you know, Barack Obama has given special favors to Muslim. No, you're right. It's near racist. I got nothing. And the whole room laughed. Like, you know, so I think that's sort of what's missing. I think good journalists understand that they are supposed to bring context, that they're supposed to truly inform without bias, and that they are supposed to start conversations.
Yeah.
They're not supposed to be bomb throwers. They're not supposed to be dismissive. They're supposed to inform about every option. And I think that's the problem that libertarians have. And I think when you see that dismissive attitude in the local media, a friendly email will work, because it does work. A nasty email will backfire. It will not work because, you know, even if you're a public figure, somebody like an Abdul or a Jim Shella, you know, you have feelings too.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And you're a human being and you react negatively when someone says something negative to you. And so
I love you, Abdul.
Being polite, yeah. Galt's being a dick.
I still like indie politics. I'm just saying.
But I will say 4 years ago.
One thing.
4 years ago, 6 years ago, 8 years ago, getting mentioned in the governor's race was very difficult for libertarians. Getting mentioned in the Senate race 2 years ago was very difficult.
Mayor's race 2 years ago.
It's
with Bowen.
It's gotten far better this year, where it's automatic that we're going to get a mention and a quote. So it's getting better. It's getting better, guys.
It is getting better. We're definitely growing. And that's what I don't know. I talked to Andy Horning a little bit after the debate,
because
he just did a great job. I honestly didn't know he had gotten into the debate until a week before. And I don't know when that happened, but I thought I heard that he didn't get into it, and Rupert did. And so I was very happy when I heard he was in it.
No, the Indiana Debate Commission in the statewide races puts on these debates, and it's automatic that if there's a third-party candidate that has automatic ballot access, they're in.
Yeah, sometimes they treat them differently, though. Like,
sure.
I remember, I don't know if it was considered a debate, but the hobnob with the mayor candidates, and they just, I mean, they...
Well,
like, I know people that were there, and even today I heard them say, you know, that mayor's, and they respected the first two candidates, but once Chris Bowen came on, you couldn't even hear him talk because everybody else ignored him.
I mean, there were tweets from media figures during Horning's debate that said, wouldn't it be great if we didn't have the libertarian taking up time? You're a journalist. What are you saying that for? You're a journalist, and why would you want to piss off 10% of your potential audience, one that brings a lot of traffic?
Just to play devil's advocate, I mean, you have to look at it from the perspective of a mainstream journalist. I mean, two parties goes back further than our Constitution in America. I mean, back to the Anti-Federalists and the Federalists fighting with each other.
Sure.
So, I mean, you know, it really is one of the oldest American traditions. So, I mean, it sucks. It does suck when they don't take you seriously. But, I mean, you kind of can't get bit up on it because, I mean, it's almost taboo. It's taboo,
right,
without such like a negative like, you know, it's not taboo like incest is taboo. It's taboo. It's taboo like, yeah, like, oh, well, that's novel. That's,
right.
You know.
I mean, I get that. I think the world is changing, especially because of the internet. I mean, we've talked about it on the show before. I mean, everything is changing, and the Libertarian Party is growing, and you do have an automatic, when you walk into the ballot and to cast your ballot, you're going to have three choices. That's why it blows my mind that like the Rasmussen poll didn't include Andy in their race. He's polling anywhere from 7 to 12%, depending on the poll that you look at. I mean, I'm not a math major. I failed algebra like the three times I took it at IUPUI. But I know that when you have three choices in a Senate race and you only include two in a poll, your poll is worthless. You know, it just doesn't make sense to not cover it fairly. Yeah. But
I like Nevada's fourth choice on the ballot.
NOTA.
Yeah.
None of the above.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'll work out great.
It would be cool if that won.
All right, so let's wrap up. It's been good to come back. It's been good to have a fight-free show. It took a lot of work to keep that from happening today. I can tell. Creighton's just staring me down like, I'm going to punch you in the face, fat man. And then,
I would never say that.
Yeah, I'd call you fat man, but
I disagree.
Never say it.
I think you would say that.
I think he would too, but that's all right. He can. I love Creighton. Love you, buddy. Yeah. All right. Let's wrap up. Creighton, anything you want to plug or mention or get off on the podcast here in the last few minutes?
I mean, it's...
All right, well...
Well,
then,
I mean, yeah...
Shakes his head no.
Yell at IUPUI. Yell at IUPUI is... I mean, we're kind of coasting right now. We got some events coming up on some activism, but for the most part, we're...
Fall break hit
chilling.
2 weeks ago. You guys had two big events. You had the discussion on capitalism, and then the next night you had Gary Johnson, and then you had fall break. So I get it. Midterms? Are you guys in midterms yet?
Nah, just finished last week.
Just finished. Is there anything happening at other campuses around the state that might be taking place that you've heard of?
Not really. Chicago SFL is coming up. That's kind of, you know, something that we're doing. But that's, I mean, as far as across the state, Constitution Week just ended for Yale. I mean, it's a national activism event. So, like, every chapter in the country did something. So they're still wrapping up from that. And, you know, the kind of the main crux of Yale chapters across the country is going to be moving from Constitution Week and morphing into the next activism event. And, I mean, they're doing a civil liberties tour and out in the West, and they've got the college campus debate. So, I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on that, I mean, we'll have plenty to do. But
so, yeah, check out WeAreLibertarians.com. We'll post anything that's going on around the college campuses around Indiana. Creighton blogs a lot. Well, he posts his blogs there. What's the web address for your blog if people want to go check it out?
It's a long one. Metaphysical specs. So metaphysical, I'm not spelling that. And specs.blogspot.com.
All right. All right, Galt buddy. Anything to plug? Anything you want to say before we go?
Yeah. What do you guys want to talk about next week? Let's give people a preview for next
Creed
week.
3.
Listen, we walk in here.
I want to plug next week's podcast is what I want to do.
I don't even know. I don't even know what episode number this is. But every single show, it doesn't matter. We've never prepared for a show.
I want to give people a
that's
preview.
What makes this show special. Well, absolutely no preparation.
Do you guys want to talk?
Special, that's the right
special,
word.
Special. Special is the right word. That is something that we could talk about next week. Is he told me on the way over here as I had to go pick his bum behind up for my UPY and bring him over here. Galt, buddy.
I could have walked.
Yeah, right.
I thought it'd be faster and you guys wouldn't have to wait on
you
me.
You losing weight?
Yeah, probably.
You look good. So... I guess they're banning words on campus, the derogatory words. How are they banning words like things like gay and retard and things that I don't say personally, but how do you ban a word on a college campus?
Well, they're using the part of the school policy that says, you know, you can't hate speech is what they're
calling it. Right.
So words that we can't use on here, I guess, because they're banned now.
No, you can say them. Go ahead.
No.
Give us the list.
Retarded.
Okay.
Gay.
Talking about banned.
Did
say
I say
or banned
what other
put,
words did I say?
The F word.
F word.
Fag.
Oh yeah. That.
I'm assuming I'm gonna go with N word.
Oh, they're trying to even push that handicap. They don't
handicap's
like
a bad word now.
Yeah. They what was the word? Challenged is what they want you to say.
So now when you play golf, what's your challenge?
Right. This is that
it's physically or mentally challenged. It's not handicap anymore. Handicap is derogatory now.
Are you trying to say like you can't say it or you can't put it on like a poster?
No, you can't.
Like if you're sitting in the middle of a class, you can't call
they
somebody
can't
a word.
They can't. I don't know if they can enforce you saying a word. But you definitely can't print the word or put it up somewhere on campus. And
like I wouldn't want somebody to like. I understand it. Okay, I understand like gay and retard. I wouldn't want somebody to like be like, oh, Galt, you're so fat, and fat stands for like stupid. Okay, like I take a personal affront to that.
Yeah,
even if they don't mean it as fat.
No,
is pH like, fat okay?
I don't know. People are sensitive, and you want to be sensitive to other people's feelings. But how do you enforce that? I mean, really, that's sort of my question: is how do you even so.
Well, I don't think we've gotten to that point yet. So,
all right. So let's figure that out for next week.
I think they're not going to.
I also want to challenge you guys to do a little homework for next week's podcast.
I failed out of school for that very reason. I don't do homework.
Can I maybe suggest a topic for next week?
Okay.
How about we talk about sovereign citizens?
Okay.
And you guys can do a little homework on that and bring some real information next week with you.
That's what we have you for.
All right. I'm already prepared for this.
Oh,
I've been
waiting
since we started the podcast to talk about it.
Yeah. So. I'm going to just make a bold prediction for what?
I found a website with an alternative form of United States government called the Republic of the United States.
I'm just going to go ahead and make a prediction for next week.
It's awesome.
I don't know what we're yelling about!
So... Maybe. Join us next week. We'll also cover the debates. There's another couple debates. Well, hey, listen, stick with us. We've all got busy schedules right now. We're trying to do our best to do this every week. But
and we have the election coming up. But once the election's over, I feel like we'll be back on
Assassin's Creed 3. That's going to be his research.
Dishonored, greater than Assassin's Creed.
And then
what universe?
Every universe. Bethesda is way better than Activision.
Ubisoft.
Check out our website at wearelibertarians.com. Our Facebook page. Actually, that is our website. Check us out on Google+. I want to start a libertarian movement on the Google+. Reddit's liberal. Facebook is spam. Google+ libertarian. That's what I want to do.
I've got a movement for Google+. All right, guys. Thanks for thanks for coming back. Thanks for joining us on the podcast this week. Check out lpin.org. That's my plug. We're posting a lot of great stuff. Got a lot of great candidates. Of course, I am biased. So thank you to Brian Keith Wallen for the music. Check him out on Facebook. Have a great day. This podcast is produced by What is a Hoosier Productions.